A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven, concentrate on Sin. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display, I eventually had to go down to the cellar.
That's the display department.
With a torch.
The lights probably gone.
So had the stairs.
Yours is number 6.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 452. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television, and this time we are continuing our discussion about Alice in Wonderland. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon from England. Hello.
This is a 1986 BBC serial based on the Lewis Carroll classic. 4 30-minute episodes in color with sepia tones on the framing device intros that involve Lewis Carroll telling the story and so on. And the story part of it itself in color is quite a faithful adaptation that was written and directed by Barry Letts, with Terrence Dicks producing. So this is quite a familiar team up of the two of them who worked on Doctor Who for many years. And they bring us an interesting cast with some very colorful animal costumes and makeup and something quite vivid and colorful.
And of course, we have to follow Alice into Wonderland, and she is continuing her journey since our last episode with a variety of Lewis Carroll's songs and poems set to music by Stephen Deutsch, performed with some gusto, I'm going to say, by the enthusiastic cast, a lot of them doing it underneath considerable prosthetic and makeup to make them look like the animal characters they're portraying. We talked last time about the Mad Hatter's tea party, which of course you have to have the tea party, particularly the March Hare and the Dormouse, Elizabeth Sladen, and you know, under all the fur, they're pretty good. We're going to meet the caterpillar on top of the giant mushroom. We're going to have the lobster quadrille dance, which is between the griffin and the mock turtle. All of these very familiar from various versions of Alice in Wonderland, and of course from the book itself. But here delivered, as I say, Brian, in a musical, basically.
Yes, absolutely. And we have a lot of the visuals and sequences based on the John Tenniel illustrations from 1865. And Barry Letts was quite keen on making this production adhere closely to those drawings and, of course, to the text of the original novel.
And they do indeed. They look like the John Tenniel drawings, but brought into colour and life by the cast and crew of this BBC television series.
Yes, I think it was quite successful in that way. Now, we should talk about other versions of Alice in Wonderland, and there are a lot of them. Wikipedia lists about 40 different television versions alone, going back to 1937 and up to quite recent productions. We did talk about Jonathan Miller's experimental black and white version of Alice in Wonderland from 1966. We talked about that in British Invaders 389 and 390. And that one really was quite strange.
It is strange, and regular listeners and yourself, Brian, will know that I'm rather interested in that Jonathan Miller version, but we'll come back to that in just a moment. Perhaps more relevant for this TV show is the 1973 version from the BBC of Alice Through the Looking Glass, or Just Through the Looking Glass, as I believe it was called, starring an 11-year-old at the time, Sarah Sutton, nod, another Doctor Who veteran, which we watched for British Invaders episodes 397 and 398. Again, a very sort of classic BBC tea time adaptation of a classic piece of British or, you know, children's literature. that based its production design and drawings again on the John Tenniel drawings. Now, even though they are 13 years apart and they have different actors obviously playing Alice, a lot of people will say that the 1973 Through the Looking Glass is a perfect companion piece for this 1986 version of Alice in Wonderland. We might come back to that, but it has certainly been raised a few times, Brian.
Yes, the BBC did release the two of them on DVD together, which helped bring up that conversation.
Seems like another connection.
When we discussed Alice Through the Looking Glass, we talked about how faithful do we like our adaptations to be. And certainly there's a tradition in British television, especially the BBC, of doing very faithful adaptations of source material like novels and that sort of thing. And I think that those tendencies were definitely there in that 1973 production and this 1986 production. This version does benefit from some improvements in the technology. The green screen or chroma key or CSO, that technology and the techniques of the people working at the BBC, it had improved over that 13 years. And I think some other things had as well. So there is a difference in the quality of some of those visuals.
I think we did talk about that with the 1973 Sarah Sutton series, Brian, because we did notice this was early days for the BBC using that technology, and particularly the sort of dark line around people in front of a green screen was more obvious, wasn't it?
Yes, that's true. Despite that, I would say that both productions worked quite well. The animal characters, I think, in both look good, and both of them are a lot of fun.
They are indeed. Lot of fun, lot of great characters playing the animal characters, and a bit more music perhaps in this version. But yeah, interesting companion pieces. The Jonathan Miller version, of course, is a fascinating moment of history. It's 1966. It has this very impressive cast. It has a very impressive crew behind the scenes. Particularly, we talked, I think, at some length about Ravi Shankar's music, which Miller used for his version. We have looked around at other versions, and one that's got me slightly interested is another version of Through the Looking Glass from British TV, this time Channel 4 in 1998, with a young Kate Beckinsale playing Alice. And the cast, I note, includes Geoffrey Palmer, who we've recently been talking about, Penelope Wilton, Ian Holm, who we're big fans of, Ian Richardson, we're probably even slightly bigger fans of here on British Invaders. That seems to be available on streaming at the moment, so who knows, Brian? We might come back to the world of Lewis Carroll and adaptations of his books.
That does sound like an interesting one, for sure. I will also mention an American production that I enjoyed, which was the Irwin Allen of Lost in Space fame, did a production in the 1980s, I think 1985, and it was a two-part television production that included both Alice in Wonderland and Through the Looking Glass, and had quite an impressive cast with people like Sammy Davis Jr. in it. Not one we'll be covering because it's American, but that's an interesting one too.
Oh, okay. Fascinating.
So we should get into some of our own thoughts a little more than we already have and talk about this. So, Eamon, what did you like about this adaptation of Alice in Wonderland?
I think there's a lot to like about it. I think the things that really appeal to me is, in a way, the classic BBC approach to adaptating the classics, in that they try to be very faithful. They try to make it look and sound great. So I'm going to say that the sort of, you know, the visual appeal of this series, particularly the makeup and costuming and the way they've been so faithful to the depictions that we're familiar with from Tenniel's drawings, I really like the look and sort of sound of this production, Brian. What about yourself?
Yeah, it definitely looks like a 1980s BBC production, but it does look really good, for sure. I will also mention the music, in particular the songs that were in this. They're very good, and it's an original musical, you know, original songs here. And I enjoyed those, both the writing acting of them and the performances quite a lot.
They are very good. Nice, you know, nicely put to music by Stephen Deutsch, beautifully performed by all the cast. As we've said, singing, dancing, some sort of gymnastic silhouette work in backgrounds and so on. Yeah, it does, the sound of it is great.
You mentioned the gymnastics, that old Father William sequence, and that's done in so many different ways in different productions. They did with these sort of gymnastic performances in silhouette, and that was really something. That was quite something to watch. I was very impressed.
Nice stuff, yes. What about the cast itself, Brian? What did you make of the cast in this?
I thought they were all really good. I thought Kate Dorning did a very good job in the title role. Now, it's something we have to note that she was in her early 20s. I think she was about 22 at the time. So very different from an 11-year-old Sarah Sutton, for instance. But the whole cast, I thought, was strong. I did not see anything that I wanted to be done differently in casting and performance.
Yeah, it's amazing stuff. I mean, you know, particularly there's a lot placed on the shoulders of Kate Dornin because, as you say, she's got to sing and dance and be in pretty much every scene. As you say, it probably helps that she was 22 at the time of filming. The rest of the cast I thought were lovely. All the character actors doing their character actor stuff and playing these animal characters or playing the sort of human characters of the court, but at the same time they're rather sort of exaggerated versions, which again make them all look like the Tennille drawing. So I loved all that. I thought that was great stuff. It's wonderful to see a Letts and Dix production in a way, and for us to get a chance to talk about Barry Letts and Terence Dix and to take our hats off to both of them, because obviously hugely important in classic Doctor Who that we both love. So I thought it was very nice to be able to talk about them, Brian, and recognise that they did this wonderful adaptation.
Yes, absolutely. They always ran a very tight ship and, you know, a good production office, and you can see some of that coming off here, that it was very well done, and Barry Letts, as always, being a very good director when he's in that role.
And both of them, as I'm trying to say last time, lifelong advocates for the sort of shows that we cover.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, before we get into negatives, I want to talk about this sort of philosophical issue when you're doing any adaptation of Alice in Wonderland. You have to deal with the issue that a lot of the weight of the production and a lot of what's going on is on the shoulders of the actor playing Alice. And this goes for Through the Looking Glass as well as Alice in Wonderland. And ideally, you want an actor who is about 10 or 11, you know, a very young actor playing that role. And there are a number of ways of dealing with this. When we watched the Jonathan Miller version from the 60s, they had a young actor playing Alice, and they made it work and got something interesting there, I would say out of pure weirdness, both in how the production was done and on the part of the actor. They made it work sort of because of that. And with the 1973 one with Sarah Sutton, I think they found someone who was very young and was able to do a pretty good job with it, even at that age. I think it worked well there. I don't know that it would have worked well for a production like this one. The American Irwin Allen production that I mentioned did have a very young actor, and they mostly pulled it off just through charisma. She was just a very charismatic young girl. And they also moved some of the poems and some of the different things over to the other actor. So that was yet a different way of doing it. And then this one we're talking about now uses the approach of casting an older actor, someone who's in this case 22 rather than 10. So what are your thoughts about those different approaches, and did this one work in this case? Yeah, the big question, I know.
Yes, it is a fairly, I think it's fairly obvious that the, you know, the actor playing Alice is a young adult trying to put, you know, trying to be a young girl in this series. It is always a problem because when we have child actors, it, you know, it does put an awful lot of pressure on them to be good. And we have seen some, you know, variable performances over the years from child actors. If you get somebody like Sarah Sutton, you get lucky, I think, is what happens. Or as you say, with a very charismatic lead in the other version you watched. I'm not sure what the answer is, Brian. I do have a sort of fondness for these classic BBC adaptations of literature and them using child actors in the roles, the sort of stuff we've seen in like various Narnias and Five Children and It's and so on. I did notice quite obviously here that she's, you know, she's clearly in her 20s.
Yeah, I thought in this case, I thought it worked reasonably well. You know, you're right, it was clear. But at the same time, in the way it was shot and in her performance, they de-emphasized it enough that I could ignore it fairly easily. I think part of the issue in this case with the singing and the acting and all of this, it was unlikely that they would find a young actor who could pull it off, certainly who could do what Kate Dorning did in this. I don't think even Sarah Sutton at age 11 could have pulled off this production at that point.
Right. Interesting stuff.
Yeah. And I've seen other productions where they use an older actor, and I think it worked better in this one than it did in other cases.
Okay.
Or some other cases, anyway. The movies from Tim Burton sort of recasted and decided to write it in such a way that Alice was no longer supposed to be a little girl. Alice was supposed to be older than that.
Right.
So that's yet another approach. And that was one that didn't appeal to me as much. I think when you're doing it with an older actor, I think this production did that reasonably well.
Okay. While we're tackling tricky subjects, what about if I return to one of our classics, which is the difference between a faithful adaptation and an experimental one? Again, I'm not sure it's one that we can necessarily answer, Brian, but what did you make of it in regard to the two versions of Alice in Wonderland we've looked at?
Yes, so I enjoyed this one a lot more than the Jonathan Miller one. And I do enjoy weird television and experimental television, but some of Jonathan Miller's work in particular does not work for me. And it was fascinating to watch it, but I didn't find it as entertaining or compelling or interesting as this one. And part of that was because of the choice not to use the animal costumes and makeup and so on in the 60s version. It made it much more confusing about who was who, and I think it lost some things that I like about Alice in Wonderland. So all in all, of those two, as fascinating as that one was, this is the one that I enjoyed more.
Okay, interesting. I will say that I did enjoy this one, and I really, you know, I love all the faithful stuff and the animal costumes and so on. I think if I had a choice as to what to watch tonight, I'd probably go watching the Jonathan Miller one again, but that's just a slight personal preference for the weirdness of Jonathan Miller. Plus, I'm a huge Jonathan Miller fan anyway, so maybe that's got something to do with it.
That's fair enough. What did you think of the framing device?
Oh, I was quite happy with it. Quite happy with it being done in sepia. I thought it worked well to introduce each episode and get us back into the story. Yeah, no, it was good. I quite liked the actors doing it. What about yourself? Did that work for you?
I thought it was okay, but it seemed a little unnecessary.
Right.
I didn't mind it, but I didn't seem to add very much to it for me. It was an interesting stylistic thing and an interesting way of making this production a little bit different, because that's sort of the one way that this is set apart from just doing the traditional Alice in Wonderland things. So it was okay, but I didn't feel that it added very much to it. If I were watching an edit that didn't have those sequences in it, my opinion of the show would be very similar.
Yeah. We have drifted into talking about some of our negative feelings about this show, and I'll mention that it might not be a problem for the show. It actually might be just a problem with the source material, that it does become particularly obvious on this version to me that this is just like a series of different stories that he was telling about Alice, and that some of them, particularly all the stuff about changing size, seems to go on longer than it needs to, in my opinion, Brian. I was sort of more interested in getting to some of the later stuff of the adventures in Wonderland.
Yeah, I was not bothered by that, but I think it's a fair point that, yeah, they do spend some time on that, a little more than they might on some of the later things. And that may be just because the idea of Alice changing size is such an iconic and well-remembered part of the book and of various adaptations compared to some of the other things. But I was okay with that. All in all, I was pretty pleased with this. My negative thoughts, if any, are pretty minor. You know, I did feel that the framing device was a little bit unnecessary. Some of the transitions between those sequences were maybe a little bit messy, which is maybe where you get that feel of it being a sequence of things. But those right. are pretty minor points. All in all, I thought this was a pretty strong production.
Okay, very interesting stuff to talk about. Shall we move to recommendations and you tell us what you're going to say to our listeners, Brian?
Yes, I can start with recommendations, and I will recommend this one. I really quite enjoyed it. I think if you're looking for an adaptation of Alice in Wonderland to watch or to show to your kids, there are lots of choices, and this is not a bad one. This is definitely something you could use as an introduction to Alice in Wonderland on screen for kids, I think. And if you enjoy Alice in Wonderland, it's a nice production of it, and I quite enjoyed it. So definitely recommend it.
Okay, interesting stuff. If it was available on the BBC iPlayer or somewhere else streaming here quite easily, it would be a definite thumbs up from me too, Brian. My problem is that it's not that easy to get hold of. It's expensive for what it is, and you have to be able to play a Region 1 DVD. And just because of the difficulties of availability, I'm going to say at the moment not to chase this one down until it pops up on streaming, at which point I will put the thumb back up again, Brian.
Okay, very good. And this one is a little bit more expensive in the UK than in the US at the moment because of those issues.
Yeah, unusually so.
So, in summary, Alice in Wonderland introduces us to Lewis Carroll and the Little daughters, including Alice Little, and show these sepia sequences where he is telling stories, which then turn into the familiar Alice in Wonderland in vivid color, with Alice encountering the White Rabbit and doing the size changing, eating and drinking various things, and the tea party, and all of the traditional Alice in Wonderland things in this adaptation that also brings us some nice songs, making it into a television musical.
Great stuff. And as ever, if you have seen this version of Alice in Wonderland, if you've watched it with kids or grandkids recently, then please do get in touch and let us know what you thought.
Absolutely.
And please come back and join us next time as we make our annual trip into a spin-off from one of the television shows we've already previously considered. And I'm once again, Brian, I'm very excited because we are going to the movies to see Quatermass and look at the Hammer horror film versions of the three iconic Quatermass television serials. It's thrilling stuff, Brian. I'm very hyped for this one.
Yes, it will be lovely to jump back into Quatermass and those productions. Always something interesting there. Until then, you can find all of our episodes at BritishInvaders.com, and you can search for British Invaders on Facebook to find our Facebook group there and discuss the various shows with us. And you can follow us for updates on Instagram and Threads. We are at British_Invaders_podcast on both of those platforms.
And we're also proud members of the Voice of Geeks Network, the Voice of Geeks for podcasts, for gaming content, for live streaming, for all sorts of geek-related activities going on there. Check out the Voice of Geeks at vognetwork.com.
Absolutely. So thank you for listening. And this is Brian from Canada signing off.
Yes, thank you so much. And inevitably, it's Eamon in England saying this is curiouser and curiouser.